From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, we begin Who's Behind the Secret Door? Three special guests. I've got to guess who they are. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Let's find out. Here's what's happening. Pharmacy retailer CVS is pulling out of 22-ounce bottles of Johnson & Johnson's baby powder from its stores and online as a precautionary measure. Now listen to this. Johnson & Johnson, which is facing thousands of lawsuits over a variety of products, said last week it was recalling around 33,000 bottles of baby powder in the United States after U.S. health regulators found trace amounts of asbestos in samples taken from a bottle purchased online. So how that happens, who knows? But CVS, one of the first to pull out of 22-ounce bottles of Johnson & Johnson's baby powder. If you have it, take it back to the store. The second of three forms of poliovirus has been eradicated, according to experts. There are three types of wild poliovirus, which, while scientifically different, cause the same symptoms, including paralysis or even death. The world was declared free of type 2 4 years ago, and now the World Health Organization has said that type 3 has also been eradicated. Type 1, however, still circulating primarily in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Technical glitches in Twitter's advertising software smacked the social media company in the third quarter as a pullback in spending from some buyers and weaker pricing for ads cut into revenue and profit, even though it added millions of new users. Amazon forecast for the fourth quarter revenue fell as analyst estimates said that the world's biggest online retailer is facing fierce competition from Walmart and other e-commerce players, sending its shares down 7%. The Fed's expanding offerings of liquidity to the financial system saw strong demand again from eligible banks. The Federal Reserve of New York continues to pump in billions of dollars into the banking system. Let's check in with our expert, Chuck Koppus. Charles, what's going on here with this banking system?
Well, Fred, this is pretty serious. The Fed is providing hundreds of billions of dollars each week to Wall Street. You're hardly hearing about this in the media, by the way. And Wall Street securities firms, this is going to the the primary dealers of the Fed. There's 24 of them. But why are they doing this? Your liquidity and lending is drying up. And this is the repurchase market. What that means, a repurchase agreement is a form of short-term borrowing by these dealers. And we're talking $100 or $1 or $2 trillion, per day.
Is this like 2008 all over again?
It's what?
Is this like 2008 all over again?
Well, it is, because that's what Lehman started to do, and this is going unnoticed. We're talking hundreds of billions of dollars from commercial banks, particularly they borrow from the money market funds that are sitting there risk-free. They get 2% overnight, and then these primary dealers, buy back or repurchase those treasury assets and so on, $7 trillion. It provides for cash daily operations. It's called the financial plumbing, and I understand that. But what's happening now, September 16th, they couldn't provide the cash for the repo market. And so the rates went from 2% to 10%.
Wow.
And that's why the Fed has intervened. Now, they said, the Fed is the lender of last resort, and that's what it's become. But there's no congressional hearings on this. And this could be really serious. Let me tell you what the real reason is, George.
Okay, go ahead.
Deutsche Bank is one of the primary dealers of the Federal Reserve. In fact, out of 24, 12 of them are foreign banks. Back in 2007, they lended out $29 trillion that we did not know of. And it took years to even find that out. You see what they're doing? And so Deutsche Bank is probably going to be the next Lehman collapse. That's what I think. The IMF has said they're the greatest threat to the global financial system. They only have $16 billion in market cap and $50 trillion in derivatives. So banks don't want to lend to these dealers anymore.
Well, keep your eyes on this one for us, Chuck. And, of course, we'll continue to report it. Chuck Koppus's website is his name. It's part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com if you want to track what he's doing. Senator Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat out of Massachusetts, has opened up a 7-point lead in the 2020 Democratic presidential primary, according to a poll. So she's right at this point, seems to be running away. A 7-point lead's pretty good with all those Democrats in there. Here's a mystery for NASA. NASA is baffled after failing to find any trace of India's moon lander, which mysteriously disappeared earlier this year after it crashed under the lunar surface. They can't find it. They have no idea where it is. Russia is testing its ability to disconnect from the internet. What are they doing with it? Some say they're doing it in the event of some kind of war to see how they can get by without the internet. Others say, no, no, no. It's the latest move in a series of technical and policy steps intended to allow the Russian government to cut its citizens off from the rest of the world anytime it wants. Up next, Lauren Weinstein with us. We're going to talk about the internet on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Special guest for us this hour, of course, our expert on the internet, Lauren Weinstein, who, of course, appears with us quite regularly in our news segments, but we've got him for the full hour. We will take calls with Lauren at the half as well. Many of you interested in this kind of technology. Lauren, of course, has been involved with the development of the internet for decades. He began his involvement in the early 70s at the first site of the internet's ancestor, the Defense Department's site, and Lauren is an expert regarding a wide range of privacy issues as well, in addition to artificial intelligence and everything else. And his website is vortex.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Lauren, looking forward to this. Welcome.
Thank you, George. It's always a pleasure to be here for the long form.
Exactly. I want to thank you, by the way, for your many appearances during our news segments, because they are just so poignant, straight on, and they just give us a lot of information.
It's always my pleasure.
All right. I want your reaction to Russia. Looking like they're going to clip the internet as a test, but I think there's something bigger afoot here.
Yeah, I'm in the school of thought that thinks their main interest is being able to control their own population, their own internet users.
Yep.
and to be able to control the sources of information, or try to control anyway the sources of information that their citizens and their population can access outside of the control of Putin's government.
They are looking at what has been going on in Hong Kong in the Chinese situation, and I don't think they want it to happen in Russia.
Yeah, I think we can be sure of that. And even though Russia does not have the same level of control over their internet in a global sense that as China does, China really has an iron fist on it. I think Russia is clearly moving in that direction. Even if they are not censoring quite the same way that China is, I think that Russia would very much like to have the ability to pull a switch, basically push a couple of buttons, click the mouse a couple of times, and be operating on an internal internet that was completely under their control.
Technically, can they do that? I mean, is it possible? Because what about smartphones? Won't smartphones get through all that and bypass it?
Well, it's a question of how the internet is structured. The way China's done it is they have it very centrally controlled, and if you have central government control, you're essentially controlling all the ISPs, and if you control all the ISPs, you have the ability to throttle traffic or to block it. Russia can do basically the same thing within the context of the way their internet is structured, and if phones are connecting to their mobile networks or to Wi-Fi networks that are cable based or whatever, they're going to go through those same channels. Now, there's a big exception to this, though, of course, and it's going to become a bigger and bigger exception as time goes by, and that's going to be satellite based services.
How will that work?
Well, that's going to be very interesting, because we have all these. I mean, there's going to be thousands and thousands of satellites, low orbit satellites, that are going to be providing internet service of one sort or another. How well it's really going to work is yet to be seen. How expensive it'll be is still an open question. But there's a bunch of companies now working on this and actually launching. Now, one assumes
that what will happen is that they will have to make agreements with various countries not to provide services over those countries, you know, under certain conditions or possibly ever. But you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And there's probably always going to be ways that people, you know, in countries like China and Russia and Iran or wherever, if they really want access to the internet and are willing to risk what's going to happen if they get caught, which in some of those countries can be very serious indeed, you know, they could probably find some way to communicate to the outer world.
Lauren, what's your thoughts about Amazon shares dropping 7% because of a sluggish projections?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. What that means in the long run is kind of hard to say because there's always these kinds of ups and downs and those kinds of prices. But it's certainly clear that the mainstream retailers, you know, like Best Buy and like Walmart, have been rapidly building out their own retail, online retail operations. And they have a certain advantage that isn't talked about a lot that Amazon doesn't have. Amazon can deliver stuff really fast, but having those physical stores around is very convenient to people. I mean, if they want to just get it immediately, they can drive over there and pick it up within an hour. If they want to return something, it's easier. Some of them are now offering their own same day and next day delivery services. So Amazon, you know, is clearly the 800-pound gorilla in this space. But you know, there is competition ramping up, and it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
Lots of hacking still going on. What the heck is happening in this world?
Well, you know, people are always looking for an angle, right?
They are.
I mean, you know, when you think about a hacking, you know, computer hacking is just sort of a variation, you know, I mean, you know, and I'm talking about black hat hacking. There was a time when the word hacker did not have any illicit associations with it back in the early days. That term hacking has kind of been kind of warped over the years and now it's always kind of associated with illegal things. But of course, people have always been trying to find ways to make a quick buck, and it was over the phone, over the internet and the phone. You know, it's part of the human condition and human nature.
What's the big issue you're looking at these days in the computer world?
Well, one of the things that's going on right now that's kind of interesting, and it ties in with encryption and all kinds of other things, is that cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Bitcoin in particular has really been taking a hit lately in its price, and it goes up and down too. But there are signs that the entire concept of cryptocurrencies is starting to unravel a bit.
It's waning, isn't it?
Well, we have to kind of separate cryptocurrencies from blockchain, which is kind of the underlying technology. And blockchain has kind of always been the solution in search of problems. I mean, I have really yet to see a problem that would be better solved by blockchain than through some conventional technology that's better understood. But a lot of the reasons people have been using things like Bitcoin, for a while there, it was a way to, you know, get rich quick, right? I mean, you would just sit there with a computer and it would grind away and generate Bitcoins. But as time goes by, that's gotten more and more difficult, and the amount of electricity that gets used trying to generate Bitcoins now is the reason that these Bitcoin farms are located where there's, you know, where there's relatively cheap electricity, where there's hydroelectric sources and things like that. It's still a real waste of electricity one way or the other. But the other thing about this is that Bitcoin has kind of been associated with illicit activities, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's because it was considered to be, and is generally considered to have been, an anonymous mechanism for buying things. But what's happening now is there's a couple of things happening. One is advances in breaking encryption are moving along quite rapidly. They're not really in play yet for Bitcoin, but as the years go by, that's going to become more and more of an issue. But there are other ways that authorities have found their way into these Bitcoin transaction chains. And just very recently, just within the last, I guess, week or so, the largest dark web global child exploitation ring was brought down by government agents, apparently by tracing and decrypting unraveling, I should really say, unrolling the Bitcoin transactions that people were using to pay for those services. And then, of course, we have Facebook's Libra plans, right? We've talked about that a little.
As a matter of fact, Zuckerberg was on Capitol Hill talking about this again. I think they're losing support for this.
Yeah, that's putting it lightly and politely. they are getting it. They're taking it from all sides now on this one. U.S. government, the U.S. politicians are yelling at them about it. Other countries, the EU is upset about it. A bunch of their high-profile partners have already pulled out before it even got started. They've recently pulled out. And if I had to place a bet, I would, you know, if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would say that the odds of Libra launching in any sense of any sense that compares with what it was supposed to look like would now seem to be pretty low. I suspect Facebook may want to just cut their losses on that or change what it is in some significant way that avoids most of these problems.
Why did they even think about this in the first place?
Money, you know, profit, trying to find new opportunities. I mean, in general, remember that the service that depends on advertising has to adapt to the changing dynamics of the advertising market, and it's clearly more difficult now than it was years ago. So Facebook is looking for other revenue sources, other profit centers. It seems to me that given all the bad publicity that Facebook has had in the recent past, cryptocurrency would not seem to be one of those things you would go after where you would expect to have everybody cheering.
I mean, it
seems like a kind of problematic choice. But I don't attempt to, you know, read or understand Mark Zuckerberg's mind. So.
Well, we saw what happened with Twitter today because of a software glitch. Their advertising took a tumble over the last quarter. I mean, you know, something's going on here.
Yeah, well, the internet advertising space is getting tougher. I mean, that much is for certain, and that cuts across everywhere. And so, you know, smart companies are going to be looking for other revenue sources to make up for the difference there. So I think that's logical, but you know, one hopes that they come up with ideas that aren't going to be, you know, panned the way Libra has been. I mean, when I first heard that Facebook was going to do cryptocurrency, I kind of sat here and went, boy, that's a really odd choice, it seems to me. Maybe they know something I don't. But given the reaction, the negative reactions, and again, having many of their own partners pull out already, major partners, that kind of puts a damper on the whole thing.
And doesn't it also contribute to the thoughts that Facebook is a monopoly and they're taking over too many things?
Well, you know, monopoly is not the word I use. I mean, there's you still have a lot of choices on the internet. You know, the choice that you really don't have on the internet in any practical way usually is your local ISP choices. They're usually very limited if you have any choice at all. You know, in terms of one cable company, one telephone company, sometimes only one of them offers high-speed service, sometimes none of them do. If you're not near a cellular carrier, cellular
sure.
Data tends to cost a lot more. So that's really where the kind of monopoly sensibility is. For these other firms, you know, that do these other things, there still are a lot of choices. You know, clearly there's a lot of there's a lot of power because, you know, they have so many people that like to use their services. And no matter how much negative things are said about Facebook, for example, there's a lot of people who every day spend a lot of time with Facebook. And no one holds, you know, no one forces them to do that. No one says you have to do that. They do it because they want to or they feel that they need to.
I'm still just in awe over the way ads will pop up based on what you've been looking at in the past. They find you, they remember you, and they hunt you down.
Well, it's a matter, you know, and the thing is that those ad networks, the way the ad networks work is that it's not as if the data is being sold to the advertisers. The advertisers in these systems will not know who you are unless you click on an ad.
Right.
You know. They're doing it based on anonymous matching of tokens and things like that. It's creepy to some people. A lot of people like it. I mean, the argument has always kind of been, which do you, you know, if you assume you're going to have to pay somehow, and you're going to pay through advertising in this case, since most people don't want to pay with real money, do you want to get ads that are more or less relevant to you, that might have something that's interesting to you, or you want to get random ads about stuff that you don't care about at all?
Well, that's a good point, but it is kind of creepy. Lauren, we're going to come back. We'll talk more, and we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Behind the Secret Door, three special guests for the rest of the program, one an hour. I've got to try to guess who they are, and then later on we'll take your calls with them once I figure out who they are. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Lauren Weinstein. Lauren's website, Vortex, VORTEX.com. And Lauren, you update that quite often, don't you?
Yeah, not daily or anything like that, but when there seems to be something relevant, and then often other sites that are linked to that will be updated more often than the base site itself.
What got you interested in the computers and the internet and all that?
That's an interesting question. Well, you know, when I was a kid, you know, this was, you know, before, you know, there was an internet.
I was going to say there weren't computers when you were a kid.
There were computers, but they were like the IBM, you know, like
Univax.
Univac and IBM and things like that. I played with electronics and I did the kind of usual bells and buzzers and built my own answering machines. That was kind of a diversion off from the usual path. That was an answering machine built from an Erector set that actually had a motor that lifted the handset up. I mean, that was how that worked back then, literally. When I went to UCLA, that was when I got involved with the ARPANET project, which had the first site there at UCLA. I had a friend at Stanford who had told me about that, so I went down there and started getting involved with that. And that's basically been, you know, ARPANET, internet, and all the interrelated things for my entire career since then. So I've watched the internet go from practically nothing to where it is now, and it certainly has taken a lot of twists and turns that I certainly would not have predicted in the early days.
The internet has done some amazing things, and at the same time, unwittingly, it has destroyed businesses. Looking at, for example, the newspaper business, it's not what it used to be.
Well, the internet, of course, is a quintessential tool, right? I mean, like a hammer or like a saw or like any other communication medium, it can be used for good things, and it can be used in ways that will not necessarily benefit some older technologies and older firms. I mean, you know, the buggy whip example is an obvious one. But you will note that there are still news operations that have found ways to evolve along with the internet that are now very successful. If you look at the firms that have done that, the traditional newspapers that are still doing really well, it's because they have learned how to create a hybrid kind of operation where they still have, in most cases, they still have some physical newspaper operations going on, but they're putting a lot of attention into the internet and into the web and into video and into all those other ancillary areas. Where the problem comes up, one of the problems, of course, is that if you have an industry that just sits there and doesn't try to find a way to adapt, and I'm not saying that's easy to do or even necessarily always possible to do, but if they don't try, if they're not able to adapt, then the technology is going to pass them by, and that's going to be very unfortunate.
Absolutely. I'm amazed with smartphone technology, Lauren. I mean, when you can send text messages to people, photos to people instantly all around the planet, it's just amazing.
Yeah, and I remember when I got my first cell phone, it was a little analog phone, and it was so expensive. You know, the phone was...
It was the big Motorola phone, wasn't it?
No, I didn't have one of those.
I had one of those.
Those were really something, the big handsets. Yeah, those were great. This was a smaller phone. But at the time, the kind of air plan you'd get would be like, you could talk for a full 10 minutes, and because you're one of our best customers, we'll double that to 20 minutes. And of course, there was no data or anything then. And if you were roaming, it was a manual operation. You had to dial phone numbers to switch which cell phone center you were in and all that. So in a relatively short span of time several generations of technology, we've moved to the point where in many parts of the world, the smartphones are people's only access to the Internet. This is especially true in developing parts of the world, in India and places like that, which introduces a number of interesting aspects to all of this, because obviously when you're designing sites for small mobile devices, it's a different kind of layout, a different kind of interface you have to do if you're going to optimize things for users, and you can't assume that those users are going to go home and sit in front of a regular computer screen. That phone may be their whole Internet.
That's right. Didn't the pagers come out before the cell phones?
Yeah, and I just heard, where was it? I guess maybe it was in Japan. I think I heard that within the last couple of weeks, they just shut down their last pager operation in Japan. There was the ones that only beeped, and there were the ones that would give you, they could put a little text message up. Columbo managed to get to catch a crook thanks to a text pager in one of his famous episodes. But of course, the cell phones came in and became so inexpensive, they pretty much wiped out the pager industry.
Robocalls continue to come in, Lauren.
Yeah, while there are lots of efforts going on to try to deal with them, the one getting most of the play being to finally clamp down on caller ID spoofing, which is obviously a big problem, where the call comes in and the name and number that shows is fake. It's not what from the real caller.
Yeah, how do they pull that off?
It's very easy. I mean, there's services all over the place that could do it. The calling number ID system was not built for security, because at the time it was designed, I think those specs came from Bellcor at the time. The assumption was that only really telephone companies would have access to the network at that level. But that turned out not to be the case, and one of the things that really changed it was voice over IP systems, because once voice over Internet systems came in, that gave a lot of people access to that underlying caller ID mechanism and allowed them to put arbitrary things in.
Well, this is what's interesting. I'll sometimes get a robocall that my phone will block on its own, or I'll just not answer it, and then I'll block it later. But one of the weird things is I've called them back a couple times, and it's disconnected. I mean, like almost within 5 minutes, you call the phone number back that shows up on your phone, and it's disconnected.
Yeah, because the number that they sent was not where they are. That's the problem. I mean, they spoof. They'll spoof random numbers. Sometimes they'll spoof real numbers. But the whole point is to spoof numbers that aren't going to get anyone anywhere when they call back. Now, sometimes those numbers will lead back to them, but if you call back, you're just confirming that they got a good number.
That they found you, and then they harass them.
It's not a good idea, usually, to call those things back under any conditions. When they knock down, a very complicated system has been built using digital certificates and things to finally authenticate a caller ID. It's going to help, but it's not going to end robocalls, because what will happen is, it's very easy now to get basically throwaway phone numbers from operations
that
aren't very, very tight in their rules. So they'll put real numbers on there, and the numbers will be legitimate phone numbers, but they'll probably only last 10 minutes, and then they'll switch to another number. So I don't think robocalls are going to be going anywhere fast. The caller ID clampdown will help. But there's still a long way.
Well, and I've got like caller ID on my phone, and I'll get a call from Boris Romanoff. Is there really a Boris Romanoff out there calling?
the fun part is when people get calls from their own number, and they'll spoof the number of the person they're calling as the calling number. So it
uh-huh.
looks like you're calling yourself, right? The call
That's
is coming
weird.
From your own phone. And the theory there apparently is that it'll be so confusing to people that they'll say, well, I guess I better answer it. everyone's trying to find a way to make a fast buck on these things. Robocalls have basically destroyed voice calling in a lot of ways, because there was a time when people would answer their phones. Remember when we were young, you'd say, "Oh, hello, hi," you would talk, because the probability was about 100%.
It's almost annoying to get a voice call these days.
Yeah, well, And in fact, when you want to do a voice call, what do people do? They arrange it by email or by text to arrange a time for a voice call.
I'm going to call you. That's right. Let's go to Joel in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hi, Joel. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing this
okay.
evening? How you doing, Lauren?
Hi.
I wanted to ask Lauren a question. Well, actually, I have a comment about Bitcoin first, of course. George,
sure.
What else would it be for me?
So
I wanted to just make a comment. A lot of people think Bitcoin is, you know, part of the gambit of cryptocurrencies and Libra, and they're all kind of bound together in the same clump of category. But Bitcoin is very special. It's the only decentralized cryptocurrency that exists on Earth. Every other thing that people speak of is centralized in some way and controlled by humans. And Bitcoin moves every 4 years when it has a halving event, when it has a deflationary halving event. It seems, if you look at a lifetime chart, you'll see that Bitcoin doesn't move off of news and all the other same things that other investments move off of. It's moving off of its own blockchain economics. And every time it becomes more rare and more scarce by the blockchain rewards getting cut in half, it seems to skyrocket thousands of percents in the year or two after the halving event occurs. And the question I had for Lauren is, you know, to me, the internet is kind of like, it seems like it's like a 1982 Toyota Corolla that's, you know, being kept together with duct tape and stuff. And as far as security and everything else is concerned, and I thought Web 3.0 was going to be the new internet that's run on 5G and blockchain technology in order to eliminate the need for third-party servers so that we can get our privacy and security and our sovereignty back online.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically my question.
Yeah, I'd kind of say don't hold your breath on that one. I mean, the thing about the internet is that, you know, there really is, you know, we use the term as if it's one thing, but of course it's more of a concept than anything else. There are so many different entities involved and so many different systems and so many, I mean, people running their own sites and firms and gateways. I mean, you could just go on and on and on. Part of the reason that even changes like trying to get from IPv4 to IPv6, which is a fundamental change to get around the problem of running out of addresses, IPv4 addresses, has taken much, much longer than was anticipated, and it still is nowhere near complete. And that's just because when you have a running operational thing like this, and that is now fundamental to every aspect of our lives, really, to medicine, to all forms of communications, to the phone networks. There, you couldn't imagine now, because so many of the other communications systems that we had that were separate systems have now migrated over the internet, and you can't really go back anymore because there's nothing to go back to. And you just can't disrupt anything like this now without having all kinds of horrendous results and consequences. So, these changes are going to be very, very, very slow. Usually what happens in these kinds of technologies is things are layered in little by little. And we will see as the years go by new systems and new security measures and new ways of doing it. But the reason I say don't hold your breath is these things are going to happen very, very slowly in terms of widespread adoption. So that's kind of why a lot of the internet today. This is not really quite on topic, but I mentioned to someone today, you know, I've spent most of my career working with Unix systems and Linux systems.
Right.
And I mentioned to someone, and it turns out it's right now it's the 50th anniversary of Unix. They've been having some celebratory things at Bell Labs, and I was noting that from the first day I used a Unix system at UCLA. And use the basic Unix command line commands, I'm still using most of those same command line commands on modern Linux systems today. And in one sense, that says, well, why haven't things advanced more? In the other sense, it says, well, those things were designed so well in the first place, why would they need to change? But it does mean that we're talking 50 years now, half a century, and there are technologies from back then that are still very much in use now, very successfully. So you do have this question of why disrupt what works.
Let's go to Bob in Oregon. Welcome to the program. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good evening. Thank you, George.
Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to share a quick story. Just 1 week ago, my 27-year-old daughter received one of these spoofing spam calls, and they threatened her, and they said some special agents were going to show up at her house, and that some drugs were found that had a license plate that matched her car.
Jeez.
They were able to talk her into going to her bank. She withdrew over $2,000. She left 36 cents in her bank. She drove to Walmart, got two $500 gift certificates, and she stayed on the phone with them, and they said, if you hang up, we're going to send two agents to your house right now. And then they told her to scratch out the numbers on the Walmart cards and give her those give those numbers to them. And she followed all the way through this, and then she got two eBay gift certificates for $500 each, and she was completely freaked out. And I was so shocked. And
wow.
That my daughter was so naive to fall for this kind of thing.
My.
I could not believe it.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's a very common kind of...
Can they catch these people, though, Lauren?
Probably not. I mean, the reason they use things like those gift cards or Apple Store cards and things like that is because they're so hard to trace back.
Do they use those numbers online to buy something, and then where do they ship it?
Or they have ways to convert them. You know, it's basically a way to launder funds. I mean, you know, from unsuspecting targets. The thing is that none of these, the questions people need to ask themselves. You know, and then people start to panic, but they need to ask themselves, well, is the government, is a legitimate law enforcement agency, for example, going to request payment immediately in gift cards, right? I mean, that's just not the way. when you stop it, but people are in a panic.
Well, and also the government agencies don't call you like that.
That's what I was going to say. They don't. Their first contact with you is not a phone call, and they don't say you have to pay us immediately. Stay on the phone with us while you go to get it. But people panic. They're confused. It's understandable what happens, and it's. A lot of people are wise to these, but obviously it's still lucrative enough people will go along with it to make it pay off for those kinds of operations.
Oh, I love it. And Lauren, I enjoyed this. Let's do this again, okay?
Thank you, sir. It's always always a pleasure, and I love the show, and I love the Coast audience, so thank you again.
Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the Internet, and by the way, next week, well-known hacker Kevin Mitnick joins us. He's gone straight, but he's going to tell us all about hacking and things like that. Up next, we begin, Who's Behind the Secret Door?